Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to Puto Politics, the political podcast of the San Antonio Express News. My name is Gilbert Garcia, opinion writer and columnist, and I'm joined by
Carrie Clark, columnist, editorial board.
Nancy Prayer Johnson, deputy editorial board editor.
Metro editor Greg Jefferson.
And we're only a few hours removed from Super Tuesday, which was pretty super for Governor Greg Abbott, not so super for anti-voucher Texas House Republicans. We're going to be talking a little bit more about that as we go along. A couple of things I want to mention right off the bat. There were 15 primary elections on Super Tuesday. In the Republican presidential race, former President Donald Trump won 14 out of 15. Nikki Haley won only in Vermont. And Wednesday morning, she withdrew from the race. So we kind of all saw this coming, I think. But I think the interesting thing will be to see whether Trump make some overtures to her supporters, many of whom have expressed in exit polls that they are not inclined to support him. And he's basically been saying, you know, on Truth Social, if you're a Haley donor, you know, you're barred from MAGA and that sort of thing.
So actually, Joe Biden's taking advantage.
Yeah, he's taking advantage. Yeah,
exactly. He's already reached
already
out.
Reached out to
yeah, come to
the disaffected.
Trump doesn't want you.
That's exactly right. It is a smart move. I also want to mention turnout briefly because, you know, we've heard a lot about how low turnout was, and it was in Texas in this primary, and particularly for Democrats. But just wanted to provide a little bit of context, which is that when you, Democrats did not have a competitive presidential race, and that drives so much of what we see in primaries. I was looking back at 2012, the last time we had a Democratic incumbent president, we had Barack Obama. That year, this time around in Bexar County, turnout was about 15%. In 2012, it was only 12.3%, and 60% of the people who turned out were Republicans. So Democrats were not motivated to get out that year. They were not really motivated to get out for this primary. But it doesn't necessarily tell us very much because 2012 turned out to be a pretty good year for Democrats in November. So yeah. I don't think we can take too much from this at this point.
Yeah. And when I went to vote yesterday, I waited and I went yesterday morning and it was empty.
Yeah.
I was the only one in there. And absolutely. In fact, there was like four or five workers. It felt very crowded with workers and they were just, you know, helping me with every little step. And I just felt like they were bored.
They must have been.
So I'm like, I'm so happy to show up for you right now. And we had conversations about everything.
Did they ask to wash your car?
Yeah, we're just so bored. We had conversations about
card games. Yeah.
One other lady showed up on my way out. So that was nice. And I was like, okay, good. You're not by yourself. But it's sad, you know? And I feel like we need to, obviously, more people need to get out and vote. It took me, obviously, nobody was in line before me, right? So it took all 5 minutes, you know, and we can't give it 5 minutes. I mean, what can we give?
Yeah, I agree with you. A lot of happenings in the Texas House, but I wanted to start by looking at the big statewide race, which was the Democratic contest for U.S. Senate to determine who's going to challenge Ted Cruz in November. We had San Antonio State Senator Roland Gutierrez going up against Dallas Congressman Colin Allred. I think we all saw that Colin Allred had the advantage. He bigger name. He had a lot more money. The question was, can Roland Gutierrez push him into a runoff? That did not happen or come anywhere close to happening. I mean, what are your impressions?
Yeah, we all thought that there was a chance it could be a runoff. Also thought that maybe, you know, the former DA in Ravens County, Mark Gonzalez, might do something. But it was when the early returns came out and showed how much Allred had pretty much dominated here in Bexar County. And then just statewide, it was just, money goes a long way in politics. And I think Allred was criticized by many within the party for not doing enough being in the grassroots and going door to door. But I mean, obviously the strategy worked because he raised a lot of money. He's won in dominant fashion. But now over the next few months, he's going to have to get down to the ground and make himself known to Texans if he wants any chance of beating Cruz.
Yeah, I was, in Roland's speech last night, and he said, he gave up, he stopped crying about elections a long time ago. And, that is one thing that I think of when I see Roland is how many times I've seen him cry. And I'm not talking like boohoo crying, but I'm just talking about just real feelings and wearing his heart on his sleeve and actual tears in his eyes. And it's because I saw him so many times in Uvalde. Or here at rallies about Uvalde,
yeah.
Right? And I think that really says a lot about him, that he cares so much about them. I know in his speech yesterday, and as he was watching the election results coming through, a lot of the Uvalde families were there with him, which says a lot. But it wasn't enough for voters, obviously. But I think that he gave it his best shot, and those families did support him up until the very end there. And I don't think it's going to be the end for him,
What strategy, Greg, if there is one, can call an all red fine to take on Ted Cruz?
He's going to lose.
Take all the stats away here.
Yeah, he's an I know. Well, he's an NFL, NFL player. Maybe that's it.
No, honestly, I don't know. What strikes me about clearly a blowout victory. I mean, the total was 69% support, 67 somewhere in there. Yeah, so it was really no contest at all in the end. And it's interesting that, the candidate on the Democratic side, who attracts the most attention and money is probably the most moderate one, at least among the major contenders, which is, that's what made Roland Gutierrez a pretty stark contrast to Allred. He's cool, kind of unflappable. Mm-hmm. And, Roland was deeply affected, as we all know, by the Robb Elementary shooting. Mm-hmm. He embraced gun control. He embraced a more humane way of treating migrants. And those were issues that Colin Allred just could not bring himself to really, really embrace. Mm-hmm. Not even to excite the Democratic base. What's interesting about that is, so on the Republican or the Democratic side, you have a moderate who just takes it in a walk. But on the Republican side, it's usually the more extreme candidates who are doing well. So Democrats, what they gravitate in their primaries to the moderate candidate. And on the Republican side, they gravitate to the more extreme.
Maybe it's a reflection of the fact that Republicans have become so conditioned to the idea. I mean, and maybe voters aren't even thinking along those lines. They're thinking, this is the candidate I prefer. But there's also the Republicans had their way in the state. If you're a Democrat, when you're looking at the U.S. Senate race, it's not simply who articulates my concerns, but it's like
right.
Who has even the slightest chance.
That's right. So seriously, though, looking forward to the general election, I mean, Colin Allred is going to be focusing on, apart from his base, suburban women, more moderate to conservative, who just don't want to vote for Trump and who are turned off by that kind of politics. He might be able to pick up support among those, and he's going to really, really pound his grassroots as much as he can. It's not going to be enough without the suburbs. So that's probably where he's going to go for votes. I just don't think it's going to work. Yeah.
A couple of interesting things from Roland's speech that you were talking about, Nancy. I mean, he said that he had spoken with Colin Allred earlier and that he had told him to please push for an assault weapons ban. Mm-hmm. And we know how big the gun issue is for Roland. Mm-hmm. We don't know how Colin Allred will respond to that. Also, Roland, as he does, got very fiery. He was dropping some profanities, but I mean, it was righteous anger, I think. Directed at Ted Cruz and Donald Trump, and he referred to Trump's recent statement that we've got people coming to the border and we don't even know what language they're speaking. And Roland said, "It's Spanish," and I don't think I can say.
That last night?
He did, and he said he used an epithet following that for Trump.
I believe
but,
it.
I'll just leave it at that.
His mouth can't even form the word.
I can't
spell it.
So, but anyway, I mean, yeah. And I think there are probably some Democrats even those who supported Colin Ulrich who would like to maybe see a little of that fire come from him. Maybe, yes. maybe not to the same extent.
Yes, yeah. I have seen that criticism of him that he wasn't showing up to some events and he was too quiet and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And that's definitely not a criticism we've heard of Roland, right? Yeah. He's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Always, he's not quiet. So you have the opposite here. But I do think he should, you know, Colin can start speaking up some more and showing up some more.
Yeah, I mean, smooth, moderate, and urbane is not going to beat Ted Cruz. Right. I mean, it's just not.
But that's why you also he needs to also reach out to surrogates like Roland. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yes. there's certain things yes. you can only do within your personality. And
that's true.
It would certainly look weird if Colin Ulrich right. becomes Roland Gutierrez.
Right.
But I mean, Roland would be an excellent surrogate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm sure Beto might even get out there at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe.
If we look at San Antonio, races affecting San Antonio, I think the one that stood out, I think, for a lot of us was the Texas House District 121 race, where we had Steve Allison, incumbent Republican, who had gotten in the crosshairs of Greg Abbott because Allison's a very strong public education person. He was on the Alamo Heights school board years ago, and he was against school vouchers, which is and Greg Abbott was basically devoted this primary season to getting revenge against Republicans who had crossed him on that. He'd also upset Attorney General Ken Paxton because he voted for Paxton's impeachment, and because we had seen Joe Strauss, Allison's predecessor, also attacked by people on the far right and come through it in his elections. I tended to think that would happen again. And even though, I mean, I think I mentioned this on the last podcast, I couldn't go on YouTube without seeing anti-Allison ads, just yeah. calling him too liberal and he's soft on the border and mm-hmm. he's like against parental choice. And I think I underestimated the impact of all that advertising and Greg Abbott's push. He came to San Antonio to stump for Mark LaHood and he put money into this race and Mark LaHood won easily. Yeah. And, I mean, what were your impressions of that, Greg?
I had the sense that Steve Allison was in trouble, but I was shocked by the spread between them. I mean, I think I, like you, maybe I understood that there was just an onslaught of, mm-hmm. of PAC funding mm-hmm. and targeted mailers and TV and radio ads all attacking Allison. And I just misjudged what impact that would have, you know, because Alamo Heights is not, you know, this isn't a hotbed of extremism. And this is really the core of that district, that House district. It's fairly moderate in its Republicanism. Joe Strauss is still a big deal there. But now you kind of have to quite, I'm curious. I'd love to see the boxes, you know, like specifically right. where these votes came from. But, you know, you have to reconsider, their politics now in light of this. I mean, how susceptible are they to outside influence?
I think that will be fascinating. See how Allison did in Alamo Heights. And you know, because as we talked about on the podcast before, people in Alamo Heights are really proud of their public schools. And I think defending public schools has not been an unpopular position in the past. I tend to think on the north side is where Allison probably really had some big problems.
Yeah, yeah. And and we can't underestimate. Well, first of all, you can't underestimate what $6 million can do.
That's right.
And when you basically, it's part of a concerted, targeted effort of what 15, 17, how many folks who opposed Abbott's voucher, and then Abbott's own anger, his own sense of retribution, the fact that he was so energized in exercising revenge against these members of his own party who were with him on almost every other thing, but who opposed him on this. I think we all underestimated how far that would go.
Mm-hmm. I think that influence, I mean, it was sad. I was quite shocked at the results as well at that spread. And just disappointed in voters. I think, you know, anytime I've been in the room with Steve Allison, I've been just really impressed with him and everything I've heard from anyone who cares about public schools.
Yeah.
They sing his praises. Now, I personally don't agree with every single decision he makes and all his policies, mm. But when it comes to students and schools, there's no arguing with the man. I mean, he was in it for students' best interests, for teachers' best interests.
Well, the thing is, he's a conservative. I mean, he's you know, and I don't think voting.
But not MAGA.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's, you know, yeah. So. And, but I mean, I don't think, for example, looking at the evidence against Kim Paxton saying, I think we ought to impeach him and carry this forward and see what the evidence takes us.
That's reasonable.
I think I don't necessarily think that makes you a liberal, but that's where we are at.
That's where we are right now.
What were you going to say, Greg?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, what really strikes me about this is, I mean, you've got, and we don't know yet how many incumbents went down, like how many of those who were, you know, against whom Abbott said, we don't know how bad it's going to be, but we know it's already pretty bad. Eight have already fallen. So far, I think
of the ten incumbents that he went out against. The last I saw was like five have lost, three are facing runoffs. Mm-hmm. I think, okay. And I think two are going to survive.
Okay, you know, this is like, these are incumbents who, you know, had maybe been around the legislature long enough to figure out something of the art of legislating, and you know, you're replacing them with more. You know, more extreme, more ideological candidates who have no experience
right.
in legislating. So, yeah. And Dade Phelan, I mean, if he survived, he's been forced into a runoff in Beaumont. It's an open question whether he'll even be reelected, let alone will be the next House Speaker. We just don't know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to think that's going to be a bloodbath, just figuring out who the Speaker is, but could be a bit more conservative than Dade Phelan the next time. And they'll be under a very chaotic House.
And Allison made the point with KSAT on Tuesday night that there is going to be a lot of institutional knowledge right. that will be lost. And he said he called Abbott's actions inexcusable. Mm-hmm. As far as Dade Phelan, the Speaker of the House, this is someone who was particularly targeted by Ken Paxton over right. the impeachment issue. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick also, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say he despises Dade Phelan. I mean, they've been at war with each other. And I think it's a very personal thing between them. And, Donald Trump, I don't know if that he's met Dade Phelan. I don't think he knows very much about him. Mm. But Ken Paxton helped Donald Trump in his effort to overturn the 2020 election. And Donald Trump repays loyalty. That I think we got to say that. Mm. It's kind of a one-way street, but still often for him.
Yeah.
But in this case, he came out for David Covey, who was Dade Phelan's opponent, and said, I think that anyone who supported Dade Phelan was a fool. And again, I don't know that if you ask Donald Trump, you know, about Dade Phelan's policy positions, he probably couldn't tell you very much, mm-hmm. but he knows that Ken Paxton doesn't like him. And so, mm-hmm.
right.
I
think either way, it's whatever the final numbers are, Abbott and Paxton won this. I mean, they won.
That was it. Was.
I mean, I heard a story. I think it was NPR talking about how Trump wants to that the Republicans need to start sharing the message of they're going to unite the Republican Party. That's not going to happen. I mean, even in Texas, what do they want to do? Throw everybody out that doesn't agree with them. And I don't see anything being united here. I think it's going to just get more and more divided and chaotic. And I just think yesterday's election results they make me worry about the future. You know?
Well, there's been a kind of a slow purging of traditional pragmatic conservative Republicans. When Joe Strauss decided, I'm not going to run again, he's probably looking at, you know, the climate had just become really unfavorable. When I talked to him a couple of years ago, he said, it's my type of politics, you know, working in a bipartisan fashion. Yeah. It's not fashionable right now. Lyle Larson, a friend of his, also decided I'm stepping away from the Texas House. And this all kind of leads also to Tony Gonzalez in U.S. District 23. Not exactly the same situation as Steve Allison, but somebody who, you know, he's had some pretty incendiary rhetoric against President Biden on the border. But at the same time, you know, he worked in a bipartisan fashion to get at least modest gun reform. I mean, his mm-hmm. district includes Uvalde, and he was affected by that. And he voted to codify protections for same-sex marriage, which was controversial in his party. Mm-hmm. And early on, he voted for a bipartisan commission to investigate the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. And that was extremely controversial within the Republican Party. And he is now facing a runoff from Brandon Herrera, who is a gun zealot who has more than 365,000 followers on X. And, you know, he calls himself the AK guy. And I just, we talked about him last week with John Taylor, and I think I kind of felt, as John Taylor did, that he was just kind of a gimmick. And I still kind of think it's just kind of a social media gimmick, but it's at least got him to a runoff.
I mean, sometimes the gimmick works. I will never be convinced that in 2016, Trump expected he was going to win. And if you actually look at what happened, what has happened to him since then, his life would be much better. His finances would be much better if he hadn't won. Yeah. With Gonzalez, I was surprised. I thought there was a chance that there might be a runoff, but Herrera kind of raised his totals a little bit more than I thought he would. What I go back and forth in my mind is, will this runoff would expect it to be a low turnout. So wouldn't that benefit Gonzalez?
Yeah, it would, but it depends on Herrera's campaign and how much money flows into this district on his behalf. I mean, it could, you know, I mean, just look at what happened to Steve Allison. Yeah. I mean, we were just talking about all of the money and the impact that appears to have had. I mean, you know, you could see something similar, and this is a gigantic, you know, one of the largest congressional districts in the country. But you could see something similar. I mean, a lot of money working to excite the base and, you know, get them to return to the polls. I mean, you're in a runoff, you're never going to exceed, or very rarely would you exceed, you know, the original, you know, primary election turnout. But, you know, it could be close. We don't know.
And about a year ago, Tony Gonzalez was censured by the state Republican Executive Committee, primarily over his support for the Safer Communities Act, the gun reform bill that I mentioned. Brandon Herrera really hit the airwaves hard in the last days of the campaign. And a lot of it was saying that Tony Gonzalez betrayed Donald Trump by supporting a bipartisan commission to investigate January 6th. Again, from my perspective, I'm looking at this and thinking, like the Ken Paxton impeachment issue, you're really advocating for something that's, I think, thoroughly reasonable, and it's actually on the side of justice. You're saying, let's look into this thing. This thing was disturbing. No matter what Republicans who now want to curry favor with Trump say, they were disturbed on that day and scared. And it is reasonable to investigate what happened. And the idea that that's not been seen as a betrayal of Trump is
and although Tony fully endorsed or enthusiastically endorsed Trump's run in this primary, you can't, as we're talking, you can see it now that you have it just between Gonzalez and Herrera, and with Trump solidified as the Republican nominee, Trump focusing in on this race. And going to your point, bam. The social media, money.
Suddenly you've got a Trump rally
in
El Paso, Del Rio, Eagle Pass. Yeah.
And you don't have on the other side a strong Democratic nominee. And forgive me, at this point, I can't even tell you who the Democratic nominee is right now.
Yeah. I think we're at Santos Limon, the civil engineer. Right. Originally from Del Rio in San Antonio. But yeah, this is someone who's not known, I think, to very many voters at all. And I think this gets to one of the ways in which Texas can be different from other parts of the country, because we saw in 2022 that Republicans, by nominating extremist MAGA candidates, they were losing winnable seats. They were fumbling away seats that they should have won. And in Texas, they haven't necessarily paid the same price. They're nominating extreme candidates, but it's usually in races that they're probably going to win anyway. So wanted to talk a little bit about Texas House District 118. This is a district that has been a Democratic seat in the past. It's now held by Republican John Lujan. There was some redistricting maneuvering in a couple of years ago, turned it from what was kind of a Democratic-leaning district to now, I think it's about a 50-50 district. And on the Democratic side, Christian Carranza, who's a Democratic organizer and activist, defeated former Judge Carlos Quesada. I thought that she was probably the most likely winner there, but she got, what, about 63%? The margin surprised me a little bit. Maybe it shouldn't have, but what do you think about that, Gary?
Excellent ground game. And you know, she's an organizer. I think Lujan's in trouble with this, just because of that. The thing about Lujan was fascinating is that there's nobody you meet, Republican or Democrat, who doesn't love the man.
Who
doesn't praise
very like
the man.
Yes.
But I think he's in trouble with this because of the enthusiasm and the organizational skills for this young Democrat, this young candidate.
She has the background work, field work. She's done this for Hillary Clinton, for Gene Ortiz Jones, for Julian Castro in his presidential bid. So, yeah, that, I mean, I think that's...
Which means that, you know, this time it may actually result in a victory.
A victory for her. that one's going to be... I think of the Texas House races that are rooted in San Antonio in November, that's probably going to be the one that we'll pay the most attention to, because I think that will be a very close one. Briefly, before we wrap things up, I wanted to also mention that we had two county commissioner races. Rebecca Clay Flores had faced a lot of competition on the Democratic side in her bid for a second term, and she is now looking at a runoff where she's challenged by Amanda Gonzalez and looking at a runoff there. What do you think? I mean, that's going to be, I think, kind of a hard one to predict. I mean, when you look at the runoff.
A runoff is just a whole new election. Yeah. And it's, you know, we won't really know the dynamics of it anytime soon. That it's Amanda Gonzalez isn't shocking. Mm-hmm. You know, she works for the philanthropic arm of the police union. So she's got, you know, she's got, that's always a good organization to have on your side.
Yeah.
And she does have them on her side. So, you know, that's both, you know, money from the union PAC, and that's even more importantly, kind of volunteers, kind of organizers to help her, you know, kind of get her message out. And she'll need a lot of that to unseat Rebecca Clay Flores. But I mean, you know, you have to give, Clay Flores her due. I mean, she came really close. The early vote had her at a little over 49%. If she'd had as good a showing on election day, who knows? We might not even be talking about this right now. But as it was, like, her early vote, get out the vote effort was better than her election day effort, because she was losing ground throughout the night as the election day returns came in. And I think she wound up just over, you know, 46% of the vote. And I mean, you know, so it's like she had a commanding lead, obviously, over Amanda Gonzalez throughout the night. Mm-hmm. But it's not unheard of for, you know, the second place finisher to rally and come back. I mean, it's all going to depend on what kind of support she can muster, who, you know, among all of the losing candidates, can she unite their supporters behind her? And can she raise a ton of money in the next few days?
That's, like you said, it's a whole new, it becomes a whole new race.
Yeah.
I don't know if that, I don't know if the thing with her, with this race is, to me, there was really no compelling issue, no compelling
reason.
No,
I
mean, why you were going to run against her.
It has five opponents.
You know, the whole thing about if you go after the king, you're going to be, you need to
kill
the king. She went after the king.
Yes.
Sergio Rodriguez and beat him. Mm-hmm. And so now she became the queen. So they came after her.
Yeah.
And, not enough to knock her out of a runoff.
There wasn't compelling evidence of her not serving constituents or not being.
And that was the big issue.
One of the biggest things they said, which, you know, all of them, they could all do the job. All of her opponents, I think none of them really look like they couldn't do it. But Rebecca's doing it. You know, she's already doing it. And no one raised such a big issue that would be compelling enough that she should be unseated. I didn't see any kind of when they say stuff like she's not assertive. We saw different. We see different. She was assertive.
I think Tommy Calvert would disagree. Yeah, about that. Like
whoever said that didn't go to many commission
courts.
She was pretty assertive.
Yes.
No, I mean, to me, is when it comes down to personality, you know, when you're saying the incumbent isn't accessible enough, you don't have anything better to talk about.
Yeah. Right.
And you don't have a really compelling reason for being in that
race. I mean, I can't count the number of races over the years.
Becomes the issue. You know, the truth is, like, there are two things. One is she Rebecca Clayflores did not spend a ton of money ahead of this. I think she, you know, I mean, she would have loved to have won outright. She maybe was preparing for a runoff. Mm-hmm. So she seemed to have been kind of hoarding her cash. It's not like she blew it all trying to get over 50%. So there's that. And I mean, it's like, look, she drew five opponents, not because, you know, she didn't call neighborhood associations enough or didn't, you know, respond to text messages. It was because she beat a 16-year incumbent 4 years ago. And the feeling is if you're going to win that seat for yourself, don't let her get reelected because then it's just that much harder after a second term, third term.
I mean, she's a young commissioner and she could be there for a long time if you don't defeat her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is like the one chance I think they have. Yeah.
And another person in a somewhat similar situation, you had Grant Moody, who is, you know, has only been there for literally less than a full term because of the unique circumstances under which he got the seat. So he was challenged by Chris Shewhart, who I think was in the spirit of what we saw with a lot of elections in Texas on Tuesday, arguing Grant Moody, you know, he talks like a conservative, but he acts like a liberal when he's on the commissioner's court. And it just didn't really fly. I think, well, it was a pretty close race, but it didn't fly in the same way that we saw it.
Yeah.
It just struck me, that's what you're talking about when you mentioned Moody being young. It strikes me just how I never really thought about it, just how young this commissioner's court is. Again, except for the judge, it really is. It's one of the younger groups, younger courts that I can think of.
Just a few years ago, we had Nelson Wolf, Paulo Elizondo. We had experience there. It will be, I think, fascinating runoff, and there's going to be a lot for us to talk about going forward. And we thank everybody for listening. We'll be back with you all next week. Take care.